Welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Hi.
So, Altamir, I'll start with you. Tell me, you know, your thoughts on just the importance of voice and vocal expression and just the ebbs and flows for some of us.
Yeah, I mean, it's very important for everyone to have a voice that they like. I don't think most people think about it in the way that transgender people do or think about it as much as transgender people do. But voice is a huge determinant in how other people perceive us, of course. And so that plays a huge part in transgender people's experience with interacting in the world.
Yeah. And for those who might not be familiar and something that you're focused on, tell us what gender affirming vocal training is.
Yeah. So generally, you know, when we undergo our puberty, different things happen to our voice. And so what gender affirming voice coaching is a desire to change your voice through practice and through skill. To sound more in line with how you might want to sound, especially for transgender people. For trans women, this usually involves voice feminization. And for trans men, this usually involves voice masculinization.
Mm-hmm. Liz, what's the importance of voice for you? And how did you get into this line of work?
So one of the things that I really enjoy talking about in terms of voice is the idea of authenticity. And in finding a way of using one's voice that is reflective of our identity, authenticity kind of has two sides to it.
Mm-hmm.
One side is authentic in terms of genuine, self-actuated, self-driven, and reflective of who we are as individuals.
Okay.
And then the other side of the idea of authentic is sort of authenticated or validated or stamped of approval. So in voice, I think specifically when we're working with identity and voice, we have to kind of balance both of those things. There are elements of voice, and this is singing and speech too, where we're exploring, like, what is your voice? What do you want your voice to do or not do? And how is that different, or is it different when you are alone, when you're making your own art,
mm-hmm.
versus out in the world? So that's kind of where I'm coming from with that.
Yeah.
The background of it is a fascinating, beautiful arrival of all of the other parts of my career and life so far. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. I've been in a queer community organization and advocacy for a long time. My background in voice, I'm a singer. Studied jazz and opera up through graduate school.
Oh, cool.
And vocology, which is like a science of voice. So I'm really interested in biomechanics and all the biology and anatomy and physiology.
So you walk the walk and talk the talk.
I try.
Definitely that second one.
Yes, definitely the second one. So walk us through, Altamir, your techniques that you teach your students.
Yeah, I think I use what is known, this is technical speak, but the Gestalt Perceptive Transvocal Pedagogy model.
What does that mean?
Nothing for your, you know, anybody's mind. But what it means basically is that I take a more listener approach. I encourage my students to have a more listener first approach where they want to be thinking about what their voice sounds like a lot more than what it feels like, right? We don't really have a lot of great touch receptors inside of our larynx. And so it's important for us to try to develop our ear, develop a better critical ear, listen to ourselves, and improve based on the feedback that we're getting auditorily as opposed to physically.
Oh, interesting. How did you get into this line of work?
More personal experience. I'm a transgender woman myself, so I wanted to do voice training myself. I also have a background in singing and singing pedagogy.
Ah, I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, it's
singing is at the core.
I think definitely. I think sometimes people think about it a little bit more clinically. They think about it as something that, you know, is a speech language pathologist's job necessarily. And that's usually because of the way that, you know, the insurance industry has to work within voice training to have doctors pay for, you know, or to have doctors be able to be covered by insurance. But I think of it a lot more as a skill than like something functionally is wrong. None of my students, or not many of my students, have anything functionally wrong with their voice. They have very perfectly non-dysphonic voices.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they end up wanting to do is develop a new skill, which is kind of very similar to what singing is. A lot of them have very strong voices. They're just not strong in the ways that they want them to be strong.
Interesting. So Liz, tell me more about how you're weaving together singing and gender-affirming vocal training.
Mm-hmm. I love this idea of training versus treatment. Mm-hmm. That's really important to kind of move out of the idea of a historical background of pathologizing gender dysphoria and gender diverse experiences. So in coming to a place of singing, because singing is fundamentally the most human activity, humans are the only mammals that can choke. And so evolutionarily, we traded this ability to swallow and breathe at the same time.
Fascinating.
In order to be able to speak. And so vocalization, language, singing is a fundamental human activity. And as such, it is a fundamental expression of self and a way of connecting between hearts, but from one person to the next. So it's not only one aspect of identity, it's all of the aspects of identity. And it's how we connect with each other through this uniquely human experience.
Wow. So tell me more about singing and how it helps with gender expression.
Mm-hmm. Singing is such an interesting thing coming out of the academic world into more independent. Singing is laden often with cis-normative and heteronormative narratives, meaning that most singers and most characters being portrayed by singing are presumed to be cisgender and straight. Mm-hmm. And so in the world of opera specifically, which is most of my training, is women, air quotes, sing about being in love with men, and men sing about being in love with women. And so the first step of that is to start to question, like, where does this come from? Whose story are we telling, and why does it feel like we want to tell it over and over?
Mm. You have thoughts on this, Altamira. I can see you smiling.
Yeah.
I see the wheels turning.
I mean, it's funny how much I primarily work with transgender women. That's my experience, and that's the majority of people who desire voice training. I think it's so funny how often the traditional pedagogy of singing is directly oppositional to the gender-affirming voice coaching, where a lot of times the goal of the of singing pedagogy for everyone, men and women, is to make the chamber larger and get like this kind of rounder sound. Mm-hmm. And for voice training, it's oftentimes the opposite way, for at least for transgender women.
Well, you're a singer as well, yes. As you mentioned, Altamira. You're releasing a solo album soon, I hear.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
So briefly tell us what it's about.
Oh, it's a pop album. So it's about love and breakups and hardship, yada, yada.
Sounds like
more
life.
More sentimental stuff than what we've been talking about so far.
Well, I want to give listeners a treat here. Is a tease of your new song, Sell Me This Pen. Let's listen.
Sell me this pen.
So how has singing helped you find your voice? Love that song, by the way.
Thank you.
We were
you.
All dancing.
How has singing helped me find my voice?
Yeah.
It got me thinking more creatively at an earlier age about what I could do with my voice to make it sound fun and different and weird. And so that was like more, and also it built a lot of strength in my voice that I feel like was very important for me to be able to make that transition, you know, pun intended, into a different type of voice.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You had three different studios going. We were all on our feet dancing.
I love that.
Liz, you work with singing instructors, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, is the experience different working with teachers or teaching students?
It's very different. I have a teacher training course that I offer a couple of times a year. And the majority of the industry of voice teachers is white cis women. And there is a process in those courses that happens pretty much every time. And it's really beautiful, where as we start to examine the systems in which we've learned about voice pedagogy, like Mira was saying, even just the concept of voice pedagogy is often really unnecessarily gendered or sexed even. And so just engaging with the idea that the way we learned about how the voice works is inherently misogynistic can be really liberating for a lot of these voice teachers who've never had to think about their voice. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of prescriptive narratives in terms of how singers are supposed to use their voice, and this is the healthy range of speaking and the unhealthy range. And so getting to be in a room full of people who are interacting with these questions critically, probably for the first time, it's a whole, we are redefining their entire relationship to their voice.
You're making me even think of just some singers that I know, past and present, who, you know, Mariah Carey comes to mind, for example, with that high pitch. We already know the octaves that she can hit. And then her speaking voice being so much lower, and that shocking people back in the 90s and such, when she would, you know, actually, you know, speak and accept awards, et cetera. And it was just such a conversation of like, oh, wow, like, why does she, why is her tone so much deeper?
Why do we
deeper?
Think we get to police that? Yeah.
Right, right. You wrote a book, you literally wrote a book on this stuff, The Singing Teacher's Guide to Transgender Voices. You wrote it back in 2018. I'm hearing you just released a second edition to it. Mm-hmm. What did you feel the need to update?
Oh my God, everything.
Yeah.
We almost rewrote the book entirely.
Okay.
The first edition laid out concepts, because there was nothing like it up to that point. And thankfully now there are a lot more written resources and folks out there who are doing really incredible research. But at the time, the conversation was still brand new in terms of gender and how we talk about gender with voice. And so the front half of the book in the first edition was like, here is gender, here is a list of terms. And then the back half was more technical, a little more kind of getting into how one might influence experience and expression of gender through voice. This edition, we started over completely. Mm. So there are several chapters and several bits of information about gender theory and feminist theory and why and how gender has woven its way into concepts of voice pedagogy and the idea of singing. And so rather than trying to make it sort of a two-part conversation, it's woven in through the entire text. The major message through the text is this idea of inform and affirm. So when someone comes to us with a question about how does my voice work or what should I do with my voice, air quotes should, and I think this is particularly useful or prevalent with singers who are deciding to start testosterone.
Right.
And so what do I do? Like, is it okay for me to start T? What's going to happen with my voice? And so our job as singing teachers is like, here's the research. Here is the information. How can I support you as you make this decision?
Ah, interesting.
Which, again, in the voice world is like brand new.
Right.
That's unusual for a singing teacher to like defer to the student.
You've unlocked, you know, a magical new avenue here. You've described voice training, Altamira, as a form of self-defense.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's not the best time for transgender people in this country, which is putting it lightly. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to restate, and this is something I'm constantly restating, that voice training is something that can be the difference between you getting weird looks on the bus or you not getting weird looks on the bus, because transgender people are treated a certain way. So I think voice training can be thought of as this thing that we should consider a little bit less, not less, but in addition to being this form of authenticity, loving your own voice, yada, yada, also something that's very useful and has a practical, realistic use in the real world.
Are you both seeing a rise in demand for training?
It was so crazy after the election last year, and I was like looking at my wait list and people were signing. I just felt horrible. And so I have seen more people come to me with the sort of the idea of like, I have to get this done soon because I can't really lollygag on it anymore.
Right. Can't wait. Same, Liz, are you seeing an increase in demand?
Absolutely.
More people signing up?
And I think that's why, for me, it feels really important to keep doing teacher training. And the business structure of the Voice Lab now is more of like a referral system. So people come to us. We've been around for a while, and we connect them with teachers who will be a good fit.
Well, as we wrap, why don't you tell us where folks can find resources if they're interested in learning more about your work, Altamira?
Yeah, well, I do post a lot of videos, educational resources on Instagram or YouTube.
What's your handle?
Altamira VT, Altamira VT. The VT is for voice training, not Vermont. Also, if you are interested in more information about Vocal Team, that's vocal-team.com.
Cool. And your website, Liz?
thevoicelabinc.com. You can find information about our teachers, about teacher training. The Singing Teacher's Guide to Transgender Voices is available anywhere you want to buy a book. My other book, One Weird Trick, A User's Guide to Transgender Voice, is also available on all the places.
Liz Jackson is founder of The Voice Lab, and Altamira Fulton is a voice coach and co-founder of Vocal Team. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.